You know, there's two reasons I have really, really, really enjoyed this series. And I think one is it's been really clearly biblical.
Yeah.
But the second is, I think, how practical it's been. Mm-hmm. And if I go back to the biblical, I mean, it comes right out of Matthew 28, 19 and 20. It's Jesus' Great Commission. And I love what we've done, too, because we've made it very clear that what Jesus has challenged us to do is to be disciple makers.
Yeah.
He's not challenged us to be disciples.
Yeah.
He's challenged us to be disciple makers. And I think there's lots of people and lots of churches that totally miss that.
Yes.
And it's a big difference because he's not just saying, hey, just follow me. He's saying, yeah, follow me, but I want you to make other people who are also followers of me.
Yeah.
So I think we've done a great job of emphasizing that. I think it's been very convicting for me. I'm kind of going like, okay, I need to be able to name. Who are the people that I'm helping become disciples? But then the practical nature of it, we've kind of followed the storyline of the Apostle Paul and Timothy, his apprentice, and mm-hmm. their disciple-making journey. And we see in some ways, I think the Apostle Paul grabs a hold of this vision that Jesus has of mm-hmm. everybody being a disciple maker. Mm-hmm. And then he says, hey, here's the practical way. Here's the strategy, Timothy, for how we can actually live this out. And he talks about in 2 Timothy 2:2, he says, hey, Timothy's going to start with me.
Yeah.
Then it's going to go to you. And then to faithful men and women who are going to also teach others.
Yeah.
And he lays out, let's think in terms of how do we do this for four generations? Mm-hmm. And so that's made it really practical. How do we think in terms of four generations?
Yeah. I think what you said at first about that shift from just being a disciple to being a disciple maker is really what community has been about from the very beginning. I mean, that is our mission. It's the fundamental core of our mission to help people find their way back to God. It's Matthew 28:19. It's teaching everybody to obey. It's baptizing them. It's all the things that Jesus called us to do, to be disciples who hear from God and does what he says. But what's interesting to me is that you can't really be a disciple. You can't say we're hearing from Jesus and doing what he's saying if we're not also making disciples,
right?
Because that's what he's told us to do, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard. You can't really have one without the other. Like a disciple is a disciple maker. And the fact that we've even separated them or that it's possible to separate them is the part I think we get wrong sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important distinction. I was trying to figure out how we could kind of illustrate, so I brought this baton along. I do love track and field, thanks mostly to my kids who ran cross country and track. In fact, in June, Josh and Caleb and I, we're going to head out to Eugene, Oregon, and we're going to go to the Olympic trials.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Track and field trials. Yeah. That'll be a blast. But probably the most exciting race is, I think, the relay races. And in fact, the 4x4 is the last race of any track meet, almost every track meet.
Interesting.
And every person who participates, whether they're, might be a shot putter or a high jumper or a runner, you come and you get around the track to watch the 4x4, this last event. And everybody goes crazy cheering for them.
Yeah.
Now, it's important to be fast, but probably the most important part of a relay race is actually the handoff. And you can Google this, but I mean, for the last, couple decades, the American teams in our relays in the Olympics have not always done well. We always come in, not always, most of the time we come in with some of the fastest times, seated first. But when we blow it because we don't make the handoff.
Oh,
we don't hand off the baton. Either we get out of the lane or we drop it or we get too far along. And I think in some ways, that illustrates what Jesus was challenging us to do. Yeah, run the race, but don't forget as you run the race to hand off the baton to the next generation or hand off the baton to your kids, to hand off the baton of disciple making to the people in your small group, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, I think that's what he's saying. Hey, here's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hand the baton to the next person.
That's a great illustration. And that's exactly why we've been talking to everyone to really just wake up to this calling that we're each called to be disciple makers, not just disciples ourselves. As Dave said, during the series, we've been looking at the disciple-making relationship between Paul and Timothy. And we see this idea of baton passing and happening in that relationship. And really at the heart of disciple making is this commitment to pass the baton of wisdom and teaching and love that we've received to others. And we do that to enable them to do the same for even more people. It's meant to be this type of ongoing relay race of sorts. Paul describes this continuous cycle when he writes these words to Timothy in his second letter. And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others. See, Paul has invested in Timothy's life, And he then instructs Timothy to invest in reliable people who will then be able to invest in other qualified people. You see sort of the baton moving from one generation to the next, to the next, to the next. You see, disciple making is about creating a lasting legacy of faith that outlasts our own lifetimes. When Paul challenges Timothy, he's also challenging us. He's challenging us to take the long view, to embrace our role as disciple makers. I mean, just for a second, imagine the impact that we could have together. If each one of us were to embrace this call, if each one of us were to invest in our Timothys, think about the ripple effect throughout our neighborhoods, throughout our cities, throughout our world. It's sort of like that butterfly effect, right? But instead of wings causing a typhoon or a hurricane, it's your faith sparking a global revival. And what does our world need more than that, right? And by the way, parents, this is your chief responsibility as a parent. You're to be a disciple maker for your kids. So I really want to challenge you to embrace this call from Jesus, to be a disciple maker, to find your Timothy or your Timothys. It doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to be complicated. It just needs to be real. You just need to share your journey. You need to listen to theirs and grow together in faith and in obedience to Jesus. And remember, in that grand relay race of faith, we're not just running for ourselves. We're running for the generations that will follow. So let's run this race and let's run it with perseverance and with love and with joy. And who knows, maybe one day someone will be sharing about the impact that you've had on their life, continuing this beautiful cycle of lives transformed by Jesus. Dave, the 2 Timothy 2:2 principle has really been a part of like community's DNA from the very beginning, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even kind of some ways before the beginning, because when we first started, there were five of us on the staff, five staff, no people. And we all went out and started small groups, which is how you make disciples.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, we also all selected an apprentice. So we had this real one-on-one kind of disciple-making relationship. And for me, my first apprentice there was a guy named Jerry. And actually, Jerry wasn't even a believer yet, which I think is an important kind of point that, I mean, you disciple people before they become a Christian and then after they become a Christian.
Totally.
But he had this kind of what I would call spiritual velocity. He was headed in the right direction, very interested in spiritual things. Mm-hmm. And so in addition to the small group, we would meet outside a group one-on-one. And over the course of the next year, he did. He said yes to Jesus. I got a chance to baptize him. He was probably the first person I baptized at community, which was really awesome. He continued to lead that group. And then I went, started another brand new group. And so that was that 2 Timothy 2:2, I mean, actually being lived out.
Yeah.
And we did the same thing really with all of church planting, just kind of like Paul and Timothy. For some folks, they might remember Troy and Janet McMahon.
Yeah.
Troy was a guy who was also an apprentice leader in my small group. He eventually, because he was a pretty quick study, became the leader of that group, and I went and led another group. He reproduced that group through another apprentice, disciple making happening there, and he started coaching. And when we decided to go to multiple locations for the very first time, he was the guy I asked. I said, hey, we'd love to have you come on our staff team. He quit his job at General Mills, joined our staff team. We, again, disciple making, we apprenticed him into that role. And then several years later, when he decided to go plant a church in Kansas City where he was from, we sent him and some folks and he went off and we discipled him, apprenticed him to plant a church. And it's been wildly successful. They have three locations. They've helped start three different New Thing networks out there and helped plant well over 50 churches.
That's amazing.
And you can kind of even continue the story because one of the people that went with them, and some of you will know Patrick and Nancy O'Connell, or Patrick and Nancy.
Yep.
They took them on as apprentices and discipled them. And eventually, Patrick came back to Chicago, leads all of New Thing, our church planting network. And the last 5 years, we've helped plant like almost 20,000 churches in 69 countries. But again, I mean, that's why
crazy.
But that's why Jesus says, hey, don't just be a disciple, but make disciples.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing can actually happen.
Yeah. And making disciples who make other disciples who make other disciples, that's really the key. And that's really been the story of community. And frankly, that's what drew Melissa and I here in the first place. I mean, I've told this story before, but that very first lunch that Melissa and I had with you and John was such a pivotal moment for us because you were thinking about starting a church in Downers Grove. We were thinking about planting a church. But at the time, we weren't sure like how that was going to happen together or separate. But really, after that launch, it was the desire that I had to be a part of that and to be discipled by you and by John that was like, hey, we've got to do this together. I mean, this is going to be good for us. This is going to be good for the kingdom. It's going to be good for community. It's going to be good for everybody if we keep the chain of disciples making disciples going. And the opportunity to experience that in our own life has been so huge, which makes me think of another question.
Sure.
You know, as we're talking a little bit as lead pastor and lead pastor apprentice, you know, what was it that made you want to invite me into this new relationship where we're doing this?
Well, that's pretty easy. I mean, one of the things I think we've seen over the last 7 years, and we and you've talked about this privately, but we want to let you all in on this, is, I mean, there's been a track record of proven faithfulness on Ted's part. I mean, when you did say yes to being a leadership resident to train to start a new location, you did a great job of that. Then we launched Downers Grove. It's been really successful. You did a great job of that. Then we put you really in responsibility for all of our location pastors, oversee them. Again, proven faithfulness. Then all of our expressions, and then eventually to our lead team. And so all along the way has been this track record of proven faithfulness. I would say the other thing too, and we kind of look for this in any staff person, but particularly in this role, would be what we call, you know, character, chemistry, and then also competency.
Yeah.
And when it comes to character, this person that you see here, or maybe you see him on a stage, is the exact same person you see in everyday life. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a consistency about Ted's character. I love the way that you love Melissa. I love the way you love your boys and are passionate about that. I love the way you love our staff team too. I think it's that kind of consistency in character is really, really important. I think there's also chemistry.
Yeah.
You and Melissa and Sue and I went out last night and we had a good time. Some funny stuff happened. I had some hot food. He's making fun of me because he thought I was sweating too much.
You should have seen it. It was funny. Yeah.
But we didn't go out because we had to. I mean, we wanted to. There's like a great chemistry there.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the whole staff and our philosophy of ministry, I mean, you get it. You're passionate about helping people find their way back to God and about the Jesus mission. And there's a good, I don't know what else to call it, except a vibe, a chemistry about it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is also just competency. Mm. God has given you clearly some very unique gifts, some strong leadership gifts, good communication skills, strategic kind of thinking, and good relational skills. And I think that combination together, I mean, candidly, I think you're going to take community to new places that it's never been before. And I'm really excited about that.
Wow. Thank you, Dave.
It was Paul the Apostle, who we read about in the Bible, that lived this out and modeled disciple-making for us. And we see this evidence all throughout the letters that he wrote, especially the letters to Timothy. At the end of his second letter to Timothy, you can see that Paul is preparing for a transition in leadership as he writes these words to his young apprentice, Timothy. And he says, "In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who will judge the living and the dead, and in view of his appearing and his kingdom, I give you this charge." Now, I can imagine Timothy kind of leaning in as Paul gives him this charge. And he says, "Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, encourage, with great patience and careful instruction. For the time will come when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they'll gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itchy ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths." Now, Paul knew, he knew that Timothy was going to face challenges and opposition in his life and in his leadership. And he prepares him with these words of encouragement. And he says, "But you," he's talking to Timothy, "you keep your head in all situations, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, discharge all the duties of your ministry." And then comes the part when you can tell Paul knows that a transition's coming. And he says, "For I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near. And I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." Of course, since we're preparing for this lead pastor transition, that part of the passage really sticks out to me. Now, the Greek word that Paul uses for departure has within it a couple word pictures. The first is the picture of taking down a tent. And it makes sense that Paul would use this metaphor since he was a tent maker by trade. But the analogy he's making is that the tent is like his body. It's a temporary dwelling place for the soul. And now he's an old man. He's preparing his soul to leave the body in death, and he's going to leave behind this temporary dwelling place. He's sensing that death is near. There's a second word, and the second word picture embedded in that word departure is a ship that is letting go of the lines to the anchor as it leaves the dock. And in many ways, what Paul's saying is, I will not be tethered to this dock. I'm going on a journey, a long voyage, and I need to prepare somebody else to be in charge because I may not come back. And so what Paul's doing, he actually looks back over three decades of struggle and risk and joyful obedience with a good conscience. And then he says in so many words, I have not dodged the responsibility given to me. I have not gone about it half-heartedly. I was given a race to run and I gave it my all. And when I think about what's happening with Ted and me, I actually prefer the second word picture more than the first because I don't have any plans of dying real soon. But I think for me, it's more like I'm setting out on another journey. What some of you may not know, for the last 15 years, and maybe even a little longer, I've led not only Community, but also New Thing and Exponential. And during that time, I mean, New Thing has really grown. God has blessed it. New Thing's our church planting network. And I mentioned that we've now, in the last 5 years, helped plant more than 20,000 new churches in these 69 countries. During that time, Exponential has also grown and expanded. It not only has the largest church planting conference around, but we also have expressions in Europe called Exponential Europe, then Australia, Exponential Australia, and then also Exponential Espanol. Well, the next part of my journey is to remain as the founding pastor here at Community, but also to dedicate more of my time to leading those two organizations. And because of who Ted is and how he's proven his faithfulness over the last 7 years, I feel very confident in handing that baton of leadership of Community to him next year, just like Paul did to Timothy.
Dave, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for the ways that you've invested in me, not just over these last few months as we've started this apprenticeship formally, but also over the last 7 years as I've had a chance to watch you lead, learn from you, and to be on a team with you. It has grown me in ways that I'd hoped it would and so much more. But I think the way that I've been most impacted through this apprenticeship process is just the way that you've shared your life with me. You know, the things that you wrestle with, the things that are difficult, the things that are fun, how you operate, how you're thinking about different situations and different responsibilities. It's really helped me see not just, you know, your leadership, which I know, but you and how you embody this role as a leader, as a real person, just as you are, as I see you and others see you in different scenarios. And so I've just been so thankful for that investment of life and relationship. And it's really meant so much to me. And I think it's been the thing that has made the greatest impact on me for today, but also for our future. So thank you.
Thanks, Ted. And you know, I might want to just say to everybody too, I mean, this relationship here, I mean, it is working every bit as well as it looks.
Yeah.
And you make it pretty easy. So thank you.
You make it pretty easy.
Let's go back to the baton.
Okay.
I want to illustrate for everybody kind of how this is actually strategically working, this transition, yeah, this disciple making from the lead pastor to lead pastor apprentice and eventually become the lead pastor.
Yeah.
Last September, we made the announcement that you were going to move into this role being the lead pastor apprentice. And I'm holding the baton mm-hmm. at that point. And in really ways, I mean, kind of I'm doing everything you're watching.
Yep.
Well, then come January of this year, 2024, mm-hmm. somewhere January, February, we had a lead team retreat.
Yep.
I asked Ted to come with his kind of vision script for what he'd like to see happen in the future.
Yep.
And we went over that. And by the way, it was very, very strong. Good job. And you're going to get to hear more about this come this fall.
Yeah.
And at that point, it really became a little bit more kind of like we're getting closer to making the handoff. Yeah. I was doing and you were helping.
Yep.
Next November will actually be another marker for us because in November, then you're going to start overseeing our lead team meetings, yep. actually having one-on-ones with our lead team, and it's going to be more of your doing and I'm kind of watching. So we're yep. getting close to making yep. the handoff. And then there won't be any of that.
It's too late.
Yeah. yeah. But May of 2025,
yeah.
okay, I will cease being the lead pastor and I will make the handoff.
Yep.
And then you are kind of off and yep. running to better things for a community.
Yeah. And not only do we think this is a healthy process for us as a church and for us as individuals, it's also an important thing for us to be modeling for our entire church of what a disciple-making relationship looks like. It looks like real-life investment in another person to help them find their way back to God and grow as a disciple of Jesus. That's what we've been talking about all through this series. And really, that's exactly what we're doing in our relationship. And it doesn't just happen between people in vocational ministry. It's about life. It's about all of our relationships. I mean, the first thing that I think of is a parent. I mean, parents out there, this call to be a disciple maker, this is your principal responsibility as a parent of children to make disciples of your kids. That is your role. That is your job as a parent. This applies, these concepts, these principles apply exactly to that situation.
For small group leaders too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a small group and you're leading a small group or you're an apprentice small group leader, I mean, those people are in that group and they're there for you to disciple. And this might be an important time in the life of your group where you need to have kind of let's clarify the relationship here. And that's what's going on. That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Or you think of any other ministry in our church too. I think of Kid City. I think of Stuco. Yes. I think of adult ministry. I think of community cares. I think of the arts ministries. I mean, anywhere where you're involved in the church, those people you're doing ministry alongside are opportunities to have disciple-making relationships. And it's not just ministries. It's your friends. It's your neighbors. It's your coworkers. It's anybody you have a relational connection.
We talk about where you live, work, or play.
Exactly. Any arena of life. We're called to be impact and influencers for the kingdom of God. And one of the principal ways we do that is to be a disciple maker. And so the challenge again is to find your Timothy, identify who your Timothy or who your Timothys are, and maybe start by having a U+ conversation with it. It is such a great tool to begin the process of helping walk alongside somebody in their own journey of being a disciple and a disciple maker in Jesus' name.
Yeah. And the last challenge that Jesus left us before he left planet Earth was like, hey, go and make disciples. And that's what we're going to challenge every one of you to do. Let's do that together. Go and make disciples.
Amen.
Well, as we come back together, I realize, especially if this is your first week with us, this is a bit more behind the scenes, a chance to hear from our two lead pastors, lead pastor, apprentice. Know that this isn't something we do every week, obviously. This is a little bit of a special occasion. And yeah, I am struck, especially just to keep bringing you into the context. This is a big deal for not just our church. I am probably more involved than most of you think in much of what takes place across community. Every Tuesday, I'm with Dave and Ted. Ted especially has been mentoring me over the last 2 years now that I've been here. He and I meet every other week. These are exciting, consequential shifts that we just want you to know about so that as they influence us as a community, as they influence our location, you can kind of see where it's coming from. But I think even broader, I've been around the church scene across Chicagoland long enough to know that community does have really a regional impact here. And these transitions of lead pastors has not gone particularly well in most other churches. So if you're noticing us just really slow down and emphasize very clearly who has the baton, where is the baton, follow the baton in any given moment, it's partly because I'm really, really grateful that Dave has so much integrity that he is willing to release the baton as clearly as he's been doing. And I'm so especially excited for Ted in this new season. We're going to get to hear more and more from him about where we're going as a church, that Ted is such an incredible, capable leader that I am excited to follow who is going to be receiving this baton. So this is just a little bit of behind the scenes, a little bit of family talk next week. So excited to dive into this new series to get started. I think actually we're going to do even more worship next week before we kick off this Her Stories on Mother's Day, May 12th. But just to say, come back, keep journeying with us for this morning. I'd love to close with just a chance for you to reflect on the series if you've been with us. Again, if this is your first time in, I've got space here for you to just pray with us as well. If you want to get comfortable here, I'd love to just give you a chance before we turn to communion, before we close our time in worship, to ask some personal questions that you can explore quietly, inwardly with yourself before God, as you've been hearing this vision, as you even receive this challenge, have heard this call about what it means to be a disciple maker. As we begin to settle in, I always like, for those who were with me at Gospel in the City this last week, we talked about how breathing connects you to your body and lets you enter into this present moment. It especially helps you listen to God, just open up to God. So go ahead and take a deep breath in. You can hold it for 1 or 2 seconds, and then a deep breath out. You can go ahead and do that again, a deep breath in. Hold it a couple seconds and a deep breath out. This is just a chance for you to slow down. I know how busy your week is. I know how busy even this Sunday is going to become. Take one more deep, slow breath in. You can hold it and a deep, slow breath out. As we invite God to speak to you, maybe to nudge your heart right now in this moment, I just want to invite you to first imagine who has been a Paul-type mentor, disciple maker to you. Maybe if you're just getting started, maybe you're longing for a Paul-like figure. But most of us, if we think back, there's always been someone. Was it a parent? Was it someone from your youth group? Was it a friend? As you think back on this Paul type person, do you have any moments that come to mind? Like a moment where they just saw you, they pursued you, they maybe blessed you. They said that, like, oh, I see this great thing in you. As you think of that person, especially if there's a name, would you just thank God in this moment? Just offer gratitude for who has been there in your journey. I think one of the amazing things from the Bible that we see is that with those people, God says, I sent them to you. Even if they didn't know it, even if you didn't know it, God sent them, God placed them there in your life. And this is a wonderful moment to just say, thank you, God, for the people you sent into my story.